therefore, Avraham Avinu didn't want Yitzchak to have a wife from those type of people, of a low level of humanity, animalistic people. People who are very, you would say, unsublimated. So that type of a person, people who are raised in such a society, are going to be on a very low level, and there's very little that could be hoped for from such individuals. And therefore, he didn't want Yitzchak to marry somebody who came from that low level of life. But Lavan Arami was a different story. He was a Russia, but he was a very sophisticated Russia. See, he was an intelligent individual. He used his intelligence, and he was more of a sublimated type of person. So that type of person, while he may be a Russia, nevertheless, there's hope that his children could become something. Because even though his energies are directed towards the wrong area, but at least his energies are sublimated to the intellectual sphere, and may be using it for the wrong purpose. But he's a sophisticated person, sophisticated individual. So children from such people can be very great people. But when you're dealing with a nefesh bahami, just the brute, animalistic nature of man, where there's no sublimation, but the person is just basically steeped in his tithes, see, very low level, like a person that's very close to the biological, such a person, you can't hope, there's very little hope for their offspring that they could ever become anything. Lavan Arami is a different story. He's very sophisticated, very intelligent. So that's why Avraham Avinu told Eliezer that he should go to his family, Lavan Arami, even though it was a Russia. But it was a different kind of a Russia. So you can't always say, just keep away from a Russia. It depends. You have to analyze what kind of Russia he is. Could be the type of Russia that could be very evil, but he's very sophisticated, and from his offspring, you can have an individual that's on a very high level. All you have to do is direct that energy to the right objective. See? Now, that's why we're there. Now, the point I want to make is like this, that it's really, that the parsha of Lavan Arami is really, just let me just give you the basic idea that the Torah is telling us in Lavan Arami. And that is really the points we mentioned before, that pasuk. One pasuk says that Tov Erech Apayim Migibor, I mean the same pasuk. Basically, it means a person who is rational about his anger. So he's on a higher level because he's using rationality, even though he's on a low level because he's steeped in the concept of revenge. But the true person is Moshe, what is the post again? What's the post? Moshe Barucha Milochadir. That's the highest level, is Moshe Barucha. He lives in reality, the reality his mind dictates. And there's no need for revenge. See? That's the highest level. Now, the story of Lavan and Yaakov really is exactly, precisely such a story. Because Lavan is the individual who's the Erech HaPayim. See? He's the person that's rational, cunning, rational about his objectives. But the objectives themselves are not rational. Whereas Yaakov Avinu is the person who is rational totally. His whole framework is a rational framework. And the whole story of Lavan and Yaakov, the contest between Lavan and Yaakov is really a contest between two people. It represents a contest between the person who's the rational within a certain framework, but the framework itself is irrational. That's Lavan, the man of greed. And Yaakov is a man whose very framework is rational. An interesting thing. What does the Torah tell us? The Torah tells us an outcome that's... what's the outcome in the Torah? The outcome is very interesting. The outcome is that Yaakov prevails. But Yaakov is only succeeds because of one thing. Because of Hashgachas Hashem. Because of Hashgachas Hashem. Actually, Yaakov would have failed against Lavan. And as smart as he was, and he was very cunning himself, because you see that Chazal say that the pasuk says ki achi aviyahu. So what do you mean? He wasn't the brother of Lavan; he was the nephew. So Chazal say, no, Achiv, he said to Rachel, Achiv ani baramas. I can be just as tricky as him. Be just as tricky, just as deceitful. And he knew how to be very cunning, but you see, he wasn't as good as Lavan. Lavan outbid him. But the only thing that saved him was the Ashgacha. Ashgacha saved him. Now, what I want to say is that it's not just the Ashgacha. We can't look at the Ashgacha as just an outside influence, an extraneous phenomena that just pops in miraculously. But the Ashgacha is a part of the universe, the natural part of the universe, Ashgacha Hashem. It's not really unnatural. We don't call Ashgacha really an ace. We don't call Ashgacha. Ashgacha is different. Ashgacha is different than an ace. We spoke about that. So you see that a person who is in the rational framework is totally rational. He is in line with the totality of reality, and therefore he gains from the Ashgachas Hashem, from Ashgach. So the only way that Yaakov was able to defeat Lavan was really because of the fact that he was in the true framework of reality, therefore he's associated, inherently associated with God, who's the source of reality, and because of that, the Ashgacha caused him to succeed. It's not an ace, not a miracle, but it's a natural phenomenon of Ashgacha. Ashgacha means that he who is a part of the true framework of reality is naturally related to God, has a certain relationship to God, is the source of reality. And because of that, reality will be affected in his favor. That's the concept. Not considered an ace. So what I want to say is like this, that in Yadis, Yadis deals on two levels. It deals in terms of philosophy of ethics. Philosophy of ethics is one level, which means to say a person that lives in the proper way, so he lives a more blessed existence, so to speak. He's a happier person, naturally, because of ethics. But we say there's another dimension also. There's a dimension of the Ashgacha as well, that a person who lives in a truly rational framework, on one, it's two levels. On one level, if he lives in a truly rational framework, he has to live a better life. Because you see that any rationality improves a person's life. So therefore, he who has the rational framework must of necessity have a much, much superior life, you see. But then there's a second level. The second level is the level of the Ashgacha. That's a metaphysical level, which means to say that he who lives the totally rational life also taps the Ashgacha Hashem, which is the source of all rationality, and he relates to them in a way which is a metaphysical phenomenon. I'm not going to explain or even attempt to explain that phenomenon, because obviously that phenomenon is the highest to understand that. You have to have Nevuos Moshe Rabbeinu. But we can understand the basic level of what it means. So it's a metaphysical phenomenon as well. It's both an ethical phenomenon, and it's also a metaphysical phenomenon. You see? Metaphysical phenomenon. Platonic philosophy, Plato's philosophy, is purely on an ethical level. An ethical level, he shows how a person who lives the life of Chachma has a far superior life. That's on the ethical level. And as a matter of fact, somebody showed me recently that they told me about it is like Dhamma of the Prima Gudim to Aristotle's ethics. Interesting thing. And he writes that it's important to study Aristotle's ethics. And he says that that it teaches a person the proper midos, and you know, Plato also, the Rambam in one of his letters writes about the importance of that Plato's concepts are very deep, and Yadis really holds from a lot of the main ideas. Yadis definitely holds from, no question about it. And the Prima Gudim says it's important for a person to learn this, to understand it. But it's not. But I want you to understand that in Yadis, that's only one level. In Yadis has that. But Yadis also has the metaphysical idea. Then metaphysics, you can't have. Socrates can't work out the metaphysics. Metaphysics is only through Nevuah. But there's a metaphysical counterpart. But the ethical is definitely true. Mishle is mainly the ethics. Is it? You're dealing on two levels here. There's a Chazal. I don't remember exactly. I'm sorry. But the Chazal says that I think it was a Rekiva, that he saw a certain reward that a Rasha got in this world, and he was happy. Why? Because he said, "Imla over Ritzon Okach, If it's for those that violate God's law, if they get such a reward, how much more does the person who lives with God's law, how much more reward will he get? What does it mean? I mean, it sounds like an empty statement. But really what it means is that once a person knows, has the knowledge of the fact that if he lives within the framework of reality, that we don't know what the extent of this of Sfar is. So you could see that that little bit of rationality that this individual had, what he reaped from that. So could you imagine he who lives in the framework of reality and metaphysically is related to God, how much scar this individual must have? That's the essence of the statement. See, it's a beautiful statement if you understand what the framework is. I think it was over here. La'ovre ritzono kach, la'ose ritzono alachas kama v'chama. Means if a person goes against God, but insofar as one small thing he's in line with God and he receives a certain reward, how much more must it be for he whose framework is in reality? It's impossible to be otherwise. You see? That's the statement over here. But what I'd like to do is, I'd like to go through a little bit of the parsha of Love and Arami while we're discussing it. Put on the tape. Powerful emotional attraction of the Zel Washer is it has a fantasy of greatness. Fantasy of greatness. That's what Ashiris basically is. Person is not usually involved in pursuing Ashiris just for the material gain. Material gain, a person is satisfied if he has objective needs. So he's satisfied when he fulfills his objective needs and there's nothing more. But the Ashiris that people slave for, behind that Ashiris is a certain fantasy of ultimate grandeur. It's a fantasy of grandeur. This will convert the person into a different type of being and offer him a very special place in the universe, and it satisfies his desires, his emotions for a certain type of what he would call, quote, greatness, you see. So a person who labors under that illusion and directs his energy to that could never, of course, achieve happiness, because it stems from the fact that he feels a certain state of depletion insofar as his ego is concerned. And he's laboring and trying to overcome that through the Ashiras. But of course the Ashiras never really satisfies him, because it's a psychological phenomenon. I think this is what we spoke about. Psychological phenomenon which he can't overcome. So Ashiras is set aside as a separate thing, because it deals basically with the fantasy of grandeur, which of course is tied into the fantasy of mortality. It's basically one type of one syndrome. It's one complex, you see. So that's why you have to have all three. Because they zeo gibors insofar as the, generally speaking, so far as overcoming the emotions are concerned. The general emotions, the taivas, kino, sino, all the emotions, the individual emotions, that's what a zeo gibor deals with. And a Zeo Ashir is a separate parsha. But insofar as the way man is structured, you see, Ashirus represents a certain grandeur. And what the Mimer is saying, what Ben Zoma is saying, which is really paraphrasing the Novi. So Rabbeinu Yonah shows us that this Rabbeinu Yonah really paraphrases the Novi, Yirmiyahu. What Yirmiyahu is stating. That's why he says, "Ayisavu l'chachma chachmasa, ayisavu l'giri l'rasa, ayisavu l'asher." What's the puzzle? Ayisavu l'asher bashra. Yeah. So that's why you have to have all three. That's why you have to have all three, because the Ezel Asher represents a certain part of man's nature. Very powerful part in man, where each person wants to find a special place for himself. So he doesn't want to look, he doesn't want to feel like just a commoner, like he's just another individual. He wants to feel something special about it. And the Ashiras is something which captivates the fantasies of the masses of people. So because of the fact that people on the whole are caught up by that fantasy, the usher is one who believes that he has achieved, to some extent, this grandeur. Of course, he continues to labor and to achieve even greater grandeur, because since it's a psychological problem, he can't satisfy it by an external acquisition. He's constantly involved in pursuing it. So the Ezel Washer, the third element, is that a person should be able to overcome that part of his nature which desires greatness, the greatness. And the greatness which people respect is the one which caters to their fantasies, which is Ashiris. That's the way it works. Basically, I think I mentioned it once before, but basically the usher's greatness is totally dependent upon the Hamon's fantasies. If it wasn't for the fantasies of the Hamon, the usher really wouldn't have any place. The usher would suddenly find himself in a world where nobody else existed. He'd be the only one in the world. The Shiris would be worthless. Simply would have no value whatsoever. But the fantasy of the Hamon propels him and convinces him that what he has partakes of what is truly great. But he labors under a depleted ego. It's a psychologically, he's in an unhealthy state. But the drive is supported constantly by the fantasies of the masses. Okay, so that's why you have to have the three. Ashiras is set aside as a separate entity because it's a separate role in man's life. The most powerful, perhaps I would say the most powerful force in man. Now, what he says is like this. Then Ben Zoma says something else. He says, Ezel Mechubed HaMechaber Sabrios. Who is considered honored? He who honors the Brios, people. Shenemar ki mechabdai achabed uvozai ekolo. Okay. So Rabbeinu Yonah over here says like this. He says that after he got finished with the three, which is basically what Yirmiyahu says. So he says, now he added something else. What did he add? He says, V'od hosef ben zoma midah revias. Ben zoma added a fourth midah. Interesting. In other words, the Navi only mentioned these three. But Ben Zoma came along and added a fourth. What is the fourth? The fourth one is Ezel Mechubed HaMechaber Sabrios. Okay? So the question, of course, is if the Navi didn't see fit to add it, why did Ben Zoma add it? Apparently it was missing, so you're going to have to say the Navi is... omitted something. The Navi wasn't complete. It's difficult to understand it that way. The Navi certainly should have mentioned it. If they need four, it should be four. And it would seem, moreover, that the three really are complete. Because basically his energy is directed towards Fatma. So he has an outlet for the energies. A human being has a tremendous level of psychic energy. So he has an outlet for his psychological energy, and it's not directed towards the values of the Hamon, but towards the real world, and he overcomes his fantasy of immortality, fantasy of grandeur. So that's it. What's in what is? Okay, let's take a look. So he says like this. Hamachabed es chavero. I'll just read you the Rabbeinu Yonah and we'll try to analyze it and understand what exactly it means, okay? The questions of the Rabbeinu Yonah are... Well, that's the thing. The point is there seems to be a totally circular reason. Why? Because first he says that you shouldn't hesitate to mechabit. First he says they shouldn't hesitate to mechabit somebody. Which would seem to be... Why? Because you're going to mechabit yourself. And then he goes on to say that covet really is not a... anything objective. It's not an objective thing altogether. Because if you take a fool and you give him covet, it's worthless. So why should I mechabit somebody else? I should get covet if the whole covet is worthless. Essentially, it's worthless. What am I doing it for? It's circular reasoning. And uh, the, the, it seems to be an inherent contradiction in what he's saying. I mean, your objective is to receive covet, which itself, he says, is completely worthless. And then also that you should mechabed everybody, which seems to be against what he's saying, that if you take a fool and you give him covet, it's like you take a stone and put it in a very precious wrapper. Nonsensical. Yeah. It's la'atzma hu mechabed. Sounds like an inherent contradiction. It would seem like you have to say that over here the word covet is being used in two different senses. You see? In one sense, covet means dignity. In another sense, covet means honor. Honor meaning where you take a person and you single them out and you bestow great honor and accolades and all kinds of types of recognition and importance. You see, that's the second framework. But in one sense, covet really means respectability, certain dignity and respect. And I believe what he's saying is like this, you see? He's saying that you'll find that people aren't respectful to each other. They're not respectful to each other. But really, every person should be respectful to another individual. Why should he be respectful to them? See, in terms of dignity and respect, it's something which is a part of human nature. Every person likes to feel a sense of dignity, sense of respectability. This emotion, he doesn't degrade. This emotion doesn't degrade, Rabbeinu Yonah. But rather he maintains that it's something that a person needs. It's a part of his psychological makeup, and he needs it to make him feel comfortable, to make him feel good. Many things Chazal say, speak about in the material world that a person needs because it's part of its psychological makeup. Like Chazal say, that certain things are miyashiv daiter shalodon. A person has nice kalim, a nice dira, makes him feel good. There are certain things that a person, due to his psychological nature, he needs to make him happy. You see, not that it's the essence of his happiness, but it plays a role in his psychological makeup is such that he has those requirements. And there's nothing wrong with it, there's nothing wrong in a person pursuing those things within limits. In other words, insofar as they're in perspective, you see. So, but the thing is that what happens is they get out of perspective. Now, when they're out of perspective, what's happening is, it is a different type of phenomenon. Then already, it's not a question of quantitative increase, it's a question of a different quality. Even though they both have the same root. In other words, you could have a phenomenon which partakes of the same nature, and you have it in a lesser degree and a greater degree. But in a greater degree, it becomes a totally different phenomenon in terms of the psyche of the individual is concerned. And that's the same thing with covet. That's what he means. So on the one hand, he's talking about covet as simply respectability. You see that Chazal very much on covet Adam. As a matter of fact, that's the story with the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva, Shlomo covet Zebazah. Even great Talmid of Chachamim. You see that covet is something which a person has a psychological need for. And even a very great person has certain psychological needs. Like you see, like the Torah says that God told Avraham Avinu a lie. When Sarah said that Adoni Zakein, so when God repeated, he said, Vani Zakanti. So what is Avraham Avinu, such a great person? Why does he care if he's an old man? He doesn't know that he's going to be an old man. I mean, he knows he's going to live, he's going to be old, he's going to die. But still, psychologically, it's a disturbing element. Of course, he faces reality, but it's a disturbing. It's not something which a person you want to bring this up to make another person happy.
Okay.
So something he has to deal with in the framework of reality, but it's a disturbing feature. Same thing with cover. Same thing with cover. Truth of the matter is that there's no reason for a person even having a need logically for dignity and respectability. It's what do you need it for? It's excess baggage. But the fact is that a person's psychological makeup is such that if you demonstrate cover to another individual, it makes him feel good. Gives him a certain sense of satisfaction. You respect him, think about him, he has some worth, he has some value. So in that sense, cover really is very good. And on the contrary, if you're not mechabed another person, you're a rasha. But then there's the covet which represents a certain illness in human nature, where a person's drives become tied up totally in covet. You see? Then it becomes more than just a secondary type of phenomena which makes him feel more comfortable, but then it becomes an essence of his whole life and his whole nature. In that sense, that's the second sense that he uses the word covet. You see? So what he's saying is like this, that why is it that a person fails to be respectful and offer dignity to another human being? You see? There's a reason for it. The reason is because to him, he feels that this covet represents a certain reality. Let me just backtrack a minute. Let me just elaborate a little more on the second type of covet. The first type is the type that is a natural, a person needs psychologically. The second type is the one where a person is involved in a very unhealthy psychological state where he must have the covet, you see? In that state where a person feels he must have the covet, what happens to that person is that his reality is totally determined by what people think, you see? And because of that, covet means so much to him. And so a person that runs after covet, reide fachar covet, what does it mean, is it reide fachar covet? It means that to him, the only value, what truly determines his value is the way other people assess him and evaluate him. So that's why if you'll make a big dinner in his honor and tell him he's a great person, he'll be overjoyed, you see? If you don't respect him, he's going to be very depressed. Why? Because to him, his whole self-worth is contingent upon the way people think, you see? The way people think. It's a reality to him. The opinion that others have of him, that is the reality of his stature in life. He can't think of himself, he doesn't have the strength to think of himself in his own terms and to determine where his position is in reality. And wherever it is. Whatever people are going to do, we aren't going to change it. But to him, there is no realistic position. To him, the realistic position is that which others have determined for him. You see? So that's why he's overjoyed by covet and he's very hurt. And he's very upset and unhappy and miserable if he doesn't have the covet. Because covet is a reality. That, he says, is completely false, Rabbeinu Yonah. He says it's absurd. Because since we believe in a reality, and the moment the person accepts that there is a reality insofar as our natures are concerned, so obviously, I mean, if there's a reality insofar as a person's physical well-being is concerned, if a person is ill and all the physicians in the world would get together and give him a clean bill of health, everybody understands it's not going to affect his physical nature. He still is a sick man. In the same manner, insofar as his soul is concerned, if a person's soul is not well, and his level is a low one in reality in terms of his perfection, no matter how much people get together and give him covet, it's not going to make any difference. He's still a sick man. You see? But people have a tendency to accept only the physical reality and not reality when it comes to something which is a little more abstract, and they can somehow or other escape and think to themselves that it's not real. Doesn't matter, it's sort of like an area which is not real to them. But a chacham knows that that area is just as real as any other area, because every area is based on the chachma. This is what's more subject to the senses, doesn't make it any more real. But reality is basically dependent upon the world of ideas. So therefore, any cover that a person gives you in terms of establishing your ultimate value is worthless. But what Rabbeinu Yonah says like this is an interesting thing. He says, why is it that a person refrains from giving another person covet? So here's where Rabbeinu Yonah gets down to the emotion. He says, because he's under the misguided notion that whatever a person does in terms of covet is reality. So how can I, if I give this other person covet, if you believe that you are determining his reality by giving a covet, I say, one second, he's not deserving of this. Who is he? You see? And if I give him covet, if I give this man covet, it's as if I'm actually giving him something in reality. So, wait a minute, I have to think this over. I don't know if he's deserving of this. So in his mind, what prevents him from giving covet to another person is the fact that he is under the illusion that the giving of covet is somehow or other a process, a realistic process. He's engaged in a realistic process. He's under the illusion that there is some type of realistic process that's going on there. So that's why he says, just a second, I should give him covet. What about one second? What about me? I mean, I deserve a covet. Who is he? Only detraction, same on the same framework. It's only a detraction from his own covet because it's something real. He's in elementary covet. Now, what Rabbeinu Yonah says like this. A very, obviously a very sharp point psychologically. Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is as follows. That, you see, there's the elementary covet, there's just the dignity and respectability, and then, of course, there's the real covet. The real covet. Yeah. So, what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is like this. That really, see, Ezehu Machabres Abrias. What does Machabres Abrias mean? Machabres Abrias doesn't mean a person that will make a dinner in honor of every single Bria. That's not what he refers to. Not what he means. He means, Machabres Abrias, it means he deals with dignity and respect. He satisfies a person's psychological need for respectability. The elementary, on the elementary level, he says. So he says like this. He says, but what prevents a person from doing that is because of his belief in the real covet. So therefore, he can't even impart a small amount to another person because it's as if he's giving from the real covet to this person. So this could be a catastrophic thing in his mind, that he's actually placing this person on a very high level. Just a second, I have to consider it in terms of myself, in terms of other people. Not so quick. You don't give this away so quickly. This is reality, you see. But because he can't break away from the idea of the reality of the secondary covet, the ultimate covet. But if a person would be able to break away from that idea and would recognize that there's really no such thing as covet, because it doesn't exist, because since we believe in a reality of the state of a person's soul, all the covet in the world is not going to make any change, and that's the important thing. The important thing is the person will live a good life or a bad one insofar as this the nature of his, the level of his soul, and there's nothing to do with what anybody says. You see, if he would have that idea in front of his mind's eye at all times, then there wouldn't be any problem in giving covet. What is that? So you said, so you respected another person, you gave him a nice shalom aleichem, made him feel like he's a very important person for a moment. You satisfy the psychological need for respectability. You'd be happy to do that. The problem with doing it is that underneath it all, he really believes in the ultimate covet, you see. And that prevents him from imparting even the smallest amount to any individual because he's dealing with a very valuable thing, which is actually a determinant of reality. You see, which to him is reality. That's what he means. You see? That's very good. That's what I mean. Kalarodefach are covered bereach mana. Because Kol HaBarech Min HaKavod is Kol HaReidach HaAcharon. That's an interesting thing. Why? Because when people sense that a person is a Rodef Achar HaKavod, so that already awakens in their mind that same emotion, see, the same syndrome. Yeah. They value it. And then they're not going to give it to him, because this is the real thing. This is the real game. This is not a joke over here. If he's not serious about it, okay, we'll give him COVID. But this is the real thing. I'm giving it to him. Just a minute. You see? That's why it works that way. That's the psychology of what I call a roidev achar COVID. COVID is barech now. Yeah. Now. Yes. Listen to what Benny Yonah says. Benny Yonah says. See, a politician is a person who takes many small abuses for one big honor. That's the nature. It's a smart move. It's an intellectual move. It's like he's better than the regular person that's not a politician. He's better. Of course, everybody says, yeah, he's a politician. But they can't do it. But he's really on a higher level. Yeah, he could take the small abuses. Because he knows he's looking after the greater, he's at least he's rational. He's like the person, what does it say over there? First person. Kovish, Yisitro, whatever. Yeah, that person's definitely on a high level. Just like you said, Tov Erech HaPayim, Nigibar. Right? Nigibar. That's the same thing. He's rational insofar as Kovit is concerned. Okay. But listen to Ben Yonah says over here. It's like this. He says, Ki kol kovod asher yase odom labrios, la'atzmo hu mechabe. Why? Shegorem lohem shebal kochom yechabdu. You see? Umitoras chiyuv shehu hakovod ha'amiti. An unbelievable thing. Valzeo nemar ezeo mechubar ha'mechabe sabrios. It's an interesting thing. What is it? Is a funny thing. He's causing them to be definitely. In other words, balkocham means without they have to do it. He caused a reaction in them. See? And the Torah schiyev shehu hakovod ha'amiti, and that is the real cover. First thing he says, it must be that way. That must be the real cover. So what? I think we're being. The thing we're bringing in these better color of meetings like this. That all the midos really, you see, all the midos are really geared for one purpose, so that a person can have the best existence. That's the purpose. Now what he's saying is like this. He's saying a person that's machabed es abrios of necessity must know that covet is nothing. I'm not talking about a politician. A politician has ulterior motives. I'm talking about a person that has no, is not running for office. Just a plain person. No ulterior motives. But a person with no ulterior motives that's mechabed other people, that he caters to their sense of dignity, he's sensitive to their psychological needs, such a person is an individual who already knows the secret. He knows that there's no such thing as the real cover. He knows that. He's aware of that. So a person like that is on a very high level. He's an individual whose self-worth is really not contingent upon what others think of him. He's established his own self-worth. He's in the world of reality. He's not following illusions. So such an individual who has he really doesn't have any need for cover. You see, he doesn't have any need for cover. And that's why he's able to be mechaber others. But the situation is such that in life, you see, I want you to understand that Pirkei Avos is not just a matter of perfection in terms of spirituality. It's both. Pirkei Avos tries to teach a person that have the best life in all respects. So what Pirkei Avos is saying, Yod Min Zoma is saying, is like this, that such a person has the real covet. Why? Because he, insofar as his own needs are concerned, you see, he knows what his station is in reality, and he knows that this is nothing. But insofar as the human need for dignity and respectability, you see, which serves two purposes. First of all, a practical purpose, in order for a person to accomplish things, He has to have a certain amount of respectability among people. You can't function in a society without that. And insofar as a person has respectability, it puts him in a situation which makes everything that he does easier. If it's in terms of business, or if it's in terms of building Torah, or in terms of a favor, or whatever it might be. If it's in terms of the Tzorchei Tzibur, anything, a respected person is in a better position to accomplish anything. I mean, it's a tremendous power, tremendous power. Now, a person who knows the reality, you see, so he has the respect, that he can achieve the respectability, because there's nothing standing in his way that prevents him from being respectful to others and to cater to their needs. And in return, the natural response is that the others will be mechaberim. Therefore, he will achieve a certain respectability. And that is the kavod hamiti. That is the kavod hamiti. Because that is true. This person lives a life in which the true value of kavod is his. He benefits from the true value of kavod. In the false world, it's just the opposite. The person who is in need of kavod is really a slave to the kavod. And the kavod is really something that destroys him. It's an endless pursuit, an endless search. He may have in his life momentary moments of enjoyment, but basically he's a slave to the whole kavod, and it destroys his life. Because it upsets the whole value system, is distorted, and he can't really accomplish anything. But a person who is a free soul, a person who knows the reality, and his soul is in line with what reality is, and he recognizes the element of respectability among human beings, and therefore he lives in a way in which he's respectful to others, you see, and they in return are respectful to him. It places him in a position where the kavod that he receives, this is the true kavod. He has the true value of what kavod really has to offer, you see. And he lives let me put it this way. Insofar as kavod is concerned, this man has achieved, you see, has reaped the true and full benefit of that institution of kavod. So that's what it means. Who are kavod hamiti? It means he is in line with reality. He has reaped all the benefits that the institution has to offer. You see, and he's a free individual. That is the true. That is the true benefit of kavod. That's what it means. Who are kavod hamiti? It means he has achieved the real kavod, the real benefit of kavod. You see. That's what the Maimon means. Vis-a-vis kavod, whatever that institution is, there is such an institution in society, he has reaped the full benefits. In reality. That's the kavod hamiti. That's what he means. But utility value and psychological value. That was Levy's question. You see, Levy's question was, does a perfected individual need the psychological benefit? At this point, I would say yes. I would say it seems to me, we'll see the Rambam. We'll see the Rambam. It's a very good question. But basically, it would really be a little bit extreme to say that a normal person, even though he's perfected, doesn't have any need for a sense of respectability and a sense of dignity. I mean, it would be hard to say that the person is totally, even a perfected individual. We'll see the Rambam. The Rambam has a different idea about it. But basically, insofar as Rabbeinu Yonah is concerned, I would say that he's speaking on all levels. The Rambam, we'll see the Rambam talks about it. But let's forget about the Rambam. Insofar as Rabbeinu Yonah is concerned, I would say that what he means is he achieves the true value of kavod, both insofar as his well-being is concerned. He knows what its value is. He has a perspective on it. It's not the crazy kavod, and practically also. So this man is the man that has real kavod. The man that has reaped the benefit of the institution. He's trying to fill with the kavod chomer with that one vacuum, which is, why is it so that if you are respectful to others, that they naturally, see, says he left it open. He just says that it was respectful to other human beings, so naturally they're going to return the respect. You see? But where does that premise come from? And that's why he tries to fill the gap of that premise with that kal v'chomer. That's why he says, that's why the court on the pasuk. Ki machad ayachabed uvoz ayekol. This is all an introduction to the pasuk. Okay. Now let's take the question that we began with. Why did he bring in that fourth element, which Yirmiyahu omitted? Yeah, so what do you say? Not that difficult already to answer the question. Yeah. You see, it really exactly. See, what he had it was like this. Truth of the matter was, he said originally all he needed was two. Of course, he just needed direct energies to Chachma, and the second thing is to be Kovash Yisitro, and to describe a reality for yourself that's based upon ideas, right? And that's it. So why did he bring in a Zohar Asher? The answer to the Zohar Asher is a psychological phenomenon. A psychological phenomenon that a person naturally runs for a certain illusion of grandeur. You see? That's human nature. So that's what Asher is. He added one thing. He said it's expressed also. Asheris may be... Asheris... He's not arguing with Yirmiyahu. He's just adding another aspect, a practical aspect of that dimension. And that dimension is Kavod. Kavod and Osher really share together one common bond, and that is that they both cater to that illusion of grandeur. Yeah, you see? So Yirmiyahu mentioned Osher. But he added Kavod, and that's why he showed how a person, in practical terms, how you could tell whether a person broke away from that illusion. How could you tell if he's Machabras or Brios? You see? So it's not that he added a fourth thing and Yirmiyahu omitted it. He enhanced the last element that the last framework. There's two frameworks. The first two were based in the framework of the objective necessities. Then Usher is in the framework of psychological structure. He added to the psychological structure with Kavod. Kavod is, and he said that the way that a person can see whether he overcame his... gives to what society thinks and how society evaluates him. It's an extension, really. Ben Zomo extended Yirmiyahu. He didn't really, it's not an argument on Yirmiyahu, it's an extension. That's extension. That's the answer to the original question. Now, back to the Kal v'chomer. The only thing I would say is, insofar as the Kal v'chomer, difficult Kal v'chomer from God to people. Difficult Kal v'chomer. The only thing I'd say is that what Rabbeinu Yonah is pointing to is an interesting thing. He's saying like this. He's saying that what he's pointing to is that a person often underestimates, makes a serious mistake in underestimating the gratitude that another individual has. Mistake. Usually a person always thinks of everybody else as simply an ingrate. Okay? But the truth of the matter is that idea doesn't stem from reality. People have tremendous amount of appreciation. And a person always thinks, I have appreciation for what everybody does for me, but anybody else, they don't have any appreciation. See? That's a universal that stems from his own mind, but it's not based upon reality. Usually a person underestimates. Sometimes you can overestimate too. See, the problem is like this. The problem is, a person wants something from somebody else, so he usually overestimates what he should receive in return. So it's always he never receives enough as the investor. But when it comes to an area with where there is no return, he will always underestimate. He will always underestimate what the amount of gratitude that another individual feels. But the truth of the matter is that it's wrong. That people do have a lot of gratitude. It's not true that people are all ingrates. When it comes against their emotions, of course, it's difficult for them to work many times, and they act like ingrates. But the truth of the matter is that the underlying nature of man is not really that they don't sense gratitude. If you do a favor for somebody, and it was unwarranted, the person feels a tremendous sense of gratitude. How will pay you back is a different question. You see, but the sense of gratitude is what? But the emotional feeling is there. How will pay you back is different. But then you're coming up against other emotions. You see, so people usually think. They usually make a wrong judgment. They make a false judgment. Look at what I did for these people, or what do they do for me? Nothing. They're ingrates. They're not really ingrates. They make a mistake. Not ingrates. They sense the gratitude. A person, just like you sense gratitude when somebody... Oh, if a person wants to have an honest evaluation of how other people think, the best way usually is to evaluate how you would react. Because most of us, the psyche is mostly are pretty much the same. The person it's a hard thing to accept, but the fact is that that's the way it is in reality. If a person would come over to you and do a favor for you, and it's unwarranted, you'd feel a tremendous sense of gratitude. And every normal person, I mean, there are crazy people, but every normal person will feel a tremendous depth and sense of gratitude. People feel this. And usually people, what happens is, when a person, why people consider everybody else an ingrate, is because they don't repay them the way they expect. Many times they expect too much. That's number one. And two, repayment is a very difficult thing because the person comes against the individual comes against powerful emotions. It's hard to repay. He has his own problems. His greed, his needs, whatever. His fantasy. So it's hard to repay. But that doesn't mean that the sense of the appreciation is not there. The sense of appreciation exists in every person, in every human being. That's really what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. And that's why he says that if you're machabet the brios, if you give respect to other people, that sense of appreciation will register in them. No question about it, it will register in them, you see. Now, if you're after a particular thing, you're liable to be disappointed. Because you'll say that they don't have any gratitude. That's not true. They have the gratitude, but they can't, somehow or other, they can't bring it into action. But in terms of respect, that you'll always have. You see, where it doesn't, so to speak, cost them anything. You know what I mean? It's just a sense of respect and a sense of appreciation that every person will have. So that's why people are mistaken when they think that it doesn't pay to do somebody a favor, it doesn't pay to do somebody to show them respect or to be nice to them, to treat them nicely, because you're not going to get repaid anyways in the long run. Repayment is a different thing, different problem. The sense of appreciation every human being has, and that sense of appreciation can be converted directly into one product, and that is the respectability and the status of kavod that the person will achieve through his actions, through his deeds. And if a person realizes that that institution of kavod is not because it's real, but because it has a very good, strong, practical effect. Tov shem mi shem and tov. As practically a person does, you see, a person always doesn't value the immediate physical, anything that's not physically translated into immediate physical terms. Chacham knows that those things, in the long run, could be of tremendous value, tremendous importance. So that's why he says, that's what he's trying to say with the Kal V'Chomer. I can't interpret the Kal V'Chomer directly. I'm just saying he's getting at that point. You see what he says? It's like this. He says, in Yasalam Kovod, Koshkin Abiyah She'ina Gever Chayev L'Chabdom, in Yasalam Kovod Ki Yechaduhu V'Al Kapayim Yisa'uhu. So they'll give him tremendous... That means that the sense of appreciation for this individual will be very great. Very great. And because of that, he'll achieve a certain stature in the society, which is important. practically, in terms of his necessities, in terms of his mitzvahs he wants to accomplish, or whatever he wants to accomplish. It's an unbelievably powerful framework, you see, and that's why he will receive the benefit of the true covet. That's what he's saying, Rabbeinu Yonah. He's saying, don't make the mistake of that most people think, and they're misanthropic, and they think that people are not good. Not true, people are not good. The nature is there. Translated into terms, very few people can do it. But the sense of appreciation and the feeling of kindness towards a person that does something good for you, every individual has. Every normal individual has. And that's why the investment is returned in this specific case, in the case of covet. Part of the natural order. I know. I'm going along. I'd like to put it into more kind. I know. He's living along those lines. You're right about a certain individual. Certain individuals, he's right. I mean, a person that's an egomaniac, this is not going to work. But he's talking on the average person. You're right. I mean, the people that are really far gone, sick people emotionally, that anything, any type of covenant given, they say, I deserve more. But the average person isn't that way. The average person, recognizes there is a sense of reality there. And there's a certain appreciation, because you're catering, you make him feel very good. And that feeling you engender in him, he appreciates. He appreciates. He recognizes. Yes, he recognizes. Yeah. You're right. The way it works, it does work in a lot of different ways. One of the ways is the person that respects me, I feel that he is a very intelligent person. He knows who to respect. It's true. That's true also. But that also is a benefit. You see, that also is a benefit. It also translates into a beneficial result. And the truth matters, I don't know if... there's a logical contradiction here. Well, I'll tell you what. Someone's like this. Look, somebody can appreciate... If somebody does me a favor, I can appreciate it, right? But if somebody gives me respect, some amanasha. If I say it's a favor, some say I don't deserve it. So this guy's doing a thing, which is crazy, you see? But if I say I deserve it, so then why is he not doing anything for me? Some amanasha. But the truth of the matter is that a person doesn't look at it that way. People sense a need for a feeling of respectability. And there's an appreciation towards anyone that is the object that satisfies the need. That's as far as it goes. It's not analyzed. If it was analyzed, they'd say it's a contradiction. All things crazy. You don't deserve it. But the truth of the matter is that people don't feel it. There is the need for respectability, and they sense it's being satisfied, and you are the one that is... That is the one that's doing it, and they feel a certain appreciation for it. That's the way it really works. It works in psychological terms, not in logical terms. But the fact is, it's true. They think you're intelligent, yeah, but it's not just the logical thing that the worker says. This person is very intelligent because they respect me. There's a certain general feeling, which includes that. It's a whole complex. Okay. Laurie wanted to say that there's another distinction. In other words, Osher is the material, and then covet is the immaterial counterpart. It's true. So, person, do we say a person is permitted, perhaps, to indulge in the need of feeling self-worth, and feeling that he has some importance in terms of his immediate society, his immediate environment, and how his friends estimate him? Or do we say, no, a person should rise above that and shouldn't require that at all? That's a question which we left open. But we do see one thing. It's interesting. We see that there is an obligation to make sure that your fellow man feels, to give another person covet, to make him feel comfortable, to make him feel that he has some self-worth. And if you can't do that, it's a sign that you yourself are overcome by the idea that covet is a reality. That's why it's difficult to give covet. That's the emotion that prevents one from giving covet, because he thinks he's giving the real thing. If he's a chacham, it wouldn't disturb him at all. Because he knows that it's just something that he's doing which makes no real difference, just doing it to make the other person comfortable. That was a question we left open. We said we have to really wait till we get to the Rambam happens to be a Rambam, which is in the forthcoming, explains the forthcoming Memra in Dalet. Maybe we'll jump to there and then come back later and take in between Memras, because it really has to do directly with this. But before we do that, there was one thing we left. We left the Kal Vachomer open. He left the Kal Vachomer up, because the pasuk that he uses to support this, that one should give cover to his fellow man, is, at first sight, it's unintelligible. It says, Kimachab Dayachabe, because God says, those who honor me, I will honor. Uvoza Yekolo, and those who fail to honor me will become defamed. So what does that have to do with the memra? So he explains that it's a Kal Vachomer. What's the Kal Vachomer? The Kal Vachomer is that Im HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shekol B'yosev Lo Nivru Ela L'Kvado Shenema V'Lachvodi Barasev, a person is only created for one purpose, and that purpose is to respect God. V'Hein Chayavim L'Kvado, and they are obligated to respect God. And really, logically, it wouldn't be necessary for God to be mazik tova to them. In other words, to return any type of favor to them by showing them cover, because that's what they were created for. But he says, nevertheless, God says that I will give honor to those who give me honor. So he says, certainly Kal Vachomer, certainly his friend, who isn't obligated to honor him, if a person should honor his friend will certainly repay him. So he says, a strange Kal Vachomer from God to a person. It's strange how to understand what the Kal Vachomer is. See, I think over here the Kal Vachomer it's not a Kal Vachomer to the individual, to the person, the individual from God. The Kal Vachomer is derived parenthetically. In other words, what the Kal Vachomer means is as follows, that the, the question, of course, we have to ask is like this. God, Shekol Bar L'Chvado. Shekol Bar L'Chvado means that God created everything for his honor. What does it mean for his honor? Not that God requires honor, but it means to say that the purpose of the creation of man is that man should perceive God's wisdom and God's chachma from his Torah and indeed from all of life, from God's chachma, endless chachma in every area. And once a person perceives insofar as humanly possible, it perceives God's chachma, so then the natural response is that he has he's overcome by a certain awe, like the Rambam says, and a reverence and a respect for God. That's what it means, that God created man for his honor. Doesn't mean for his honor in terms of honoring God, that God requires honor. But it means that the purpose of man is that he should realize God's chachma, and the natural response is that he's awed by God's chachma, and he feels a tremendous reverence towards God. That's what it means, for man. But nevertheless, the pasuk says that he who honors God, God will honor him. What does it mean, God will bestow honor on him? So it means that God will place him in a position that he enjoys a certain psychological benefit of cover. Okay? So what the Rabbeinu Yonah means, that is the Kal Vachomer. Why does God honor people? Apparently it means that God recognizes that an individual requires a certain amount of esteem, of self-esteem. The individual requires a certain amount of self-esteem. So therefore, God bestows this esteem on the individual. So what it means is like this, that you see from this fact, what do you see from this fact? That it is a deep-rooted psychological need in man. They should have a certain sense of self-esteem. And that's why, even though God doesn't have to, it's not it really is not something which he deserves inherently because he's Mechabed God, but it means that God bestows this upon him because it's a need, it's an inherent need. That's so from there you have the Kal Vachomer. So it means to say that an individual senses that the Kal Vachomer is like this, that if that God doesn't have to return the cover to man, but nevertheless he does because it's something which the person requires. So God takes care of man's needs. That's the nature of God, that he takes care of man's needs. So if another individual takes care of my needs, I certainly feel a sense of appreciation towards that individual. You see, it's, in other words, since we see that it is a need in man, and God takes care of this need, because he's a gomel chesed, because God is a gomel chesed, so when another individual who is not obligated to take care of that need, you see, does that for me, in fact, I must feel a tremendous sense of appreciation. So we mentioned last week that it's not true what people say, that individuals are unappreciative of other individuals. It's not true. And so the mistake is made because people feel that they do things for others, and they feel the good that they do to others is not really returned to them. But that's a different story. That's not because the appreciation isn't registered. It's because the people have a difficult time translating it into repayment. Because it's hard for a person to repay. It's hard for a ben adam to repay another individual, because he has to take from his own, from his things which belong to him, from his own time, his own efforts, his money, whatever it might be. It's difficult for a person to do something like that. But it's not because the appreciation isn't registered. Only in an abnormal individual, appreciation isn't registered. Basically, every individual, if you do him a favor, he does sense a appreciation. How it'll be translated is another question. So what the Memra is saying is that if God does it for man, it means that it's because, even though he doesn't deserve it, but he does it because it's something which man needs. So if another individual who isn't obligated at all to take care of my needs does in fact satisfy something which I do need, I must sense a deep appreciation for that individual. And be an individual who is a chacham will of necessity give cover to another person, because through that the other person will have a sense of appreciation for him, and because of that he will be mechabed him. He will give him cover. He may not give him anything else, but the cover that he receives is of value. It's a value certainly in terms of his social stature, which makes it easy for him to if he wants to do chesed, or if he wants to do a mitzvah, he wants to be osek and sofek tzibur, whatever he might want to accomplish, to cover to something which is very beneficial, social standpoint. Question is he allowed, is he permitted to partake of that in terms of a personal psychological benefit? That's a separate question. Okay? But that's the cover line. That's right. You see how important the need is in man from the fact that God is Mechabed man, and therefore another individual, when he feels that somebody voluntarily has given him is catering to something which is so important to him, he senses an appreciation. But you might ask a question, you might say it's a contradiction there. Why? Because we said before that it's difficult to give cover. Why is it difficult to give cover? Because people think it's the real thing. So how will this other person return the cover to me? You see, because he's going to sense it's the real thing. Right? So it seems to be a worthless investment. It would seem to be a worthless investment. Because we just said that the reason why a person can't give another person kavod is because it detracts from himself, because he feels this is the real value. So how could I give something as a real value to another individual? But you're saying that if you do, that they're going to give kavod back to you. So apparently humanity doesn't consider it to be the real value on a tremendous level. So the whole thing is not necessary anymore. You see? if he considers the covenant to be the real thing, so then he can't give it to somebody else, because it's like saying the other person is greater than I am. Very painful thing. But if he realizes it's nonsense, doesn't mean anything, so then he can do it very easily. But most people apparently are not on the level. They really think the covenant is the real thing. So how will they return the covenant? You see? Seems to be a contradiction. Yeah. The answer is like this. The answer somebody mentioned last week, that, you see, when a person gives covet to another individual, the reason why the covet is returned is partly because of the fact that this individual identifies with the other individual. In other words, he feels that this person is, by raising this individual to a higher stature, he's simultaneously raising himself to a higher stature. Because he's respecting, it doesn't mean he's going to go over to this person and be machabed him and place him on a pedestal. But the mere fact that he's received this covet causes him to raise in his own mind the value of this individual. Yeah, exactly. And in that sense, he'll get covet. It's a different kind of covet. It's a different kind. It's not the same kind of covet. It's difficult. It doesn't mean he'll get directly, he will get covet. It's an indirect phenomenon of covet. He'll have a very good name. People will give it in a certain way. People will give covet to another individual, not in a direct way. It's very painful for people to do it. But in a direct way, it's a conflict. It's you against me. Who are you? You say, I'm supposed to say that you're great. I mean, take away from my own stature. Can't do that. A person who can do that, however, is one who is a chacham and who does it politically. You see, he does it because of the fact that he recognizes that he simply wants to, politically is one thing, and also because he wants to benefit man. He's a gomel chasadim also. He's a gomel chasad. So he does it for two reasons. That individual can engage in a direct bestowing of covet. He won't get a return in that sense, but in a general way, he will be considered a mechubay. There's a different type of covet. In a general sense, he'll be considered an important person, respected individual. See, people do respect such an individual. Moreover, there is also in humanity a certain objective sense. Even though people aren't on a high level, it's an interesting thing. But humanity does have on the whole, humanity has a recognition of greatness. Because you see, for instance, that Athenian society, for instance, may have destroyed a Socrates. It may have killed a Socrates. But nevertheless, he's considered, he's vindicated throughout the centuries. He's a hero. He becomes a hero. And people who, during their lifetime, are condemned because of virtuous actions are usually vindicated by humanity throughout the generations. It's a pasuk, really. Zeche tzadik levracha, v'shem rishon yirko. Zeche tzadik levracha. Remembrance of the tzadik is levracha. At the time, it's not levracha. But later it is. V'shem rishon yirko. And conversely, the name of the wicked is eventually, his wickedness is recognized. Because there is in man a certain objectivity. In humanity, there is a certain objectivity. What prevents man from being objective is the emotions of the moment, you see. But later, when those emotions are taken away, he's able to see what greatness is. That's why you have a library of great people. That's why you have people of the past. The humanity does recognize greatness. During the individual's lifetime, it's not so, necessarily. Because there are too many personal conflicts, and Rishayim can rise, in which they have tremendous power, and they get tremendous covet. But later, it's always a shame Rishayim Yirka, because humanity can see him in an objective sense. So you see that humanity on the whole does have an objective sensitivity to what is right and what is wrong, and what prevents humanity from acting that way is the emotions of the moment. When you give another person kavod, you see, you place that individual in a certain state where they can recognize a certain objective value. See? No matter how great an individual is, if he acts in a way where he fails to recognize other people, steps on other people's toes, they will never recognize it.
Why
So it's an impossibility. Yeah, the Rambam in his time was condemned and put in cherems on his writings and different things, but you see, he emerged victorious over the centuries. As a matter of fact, the Rambam writes it in a letter. He says himself, he says, I know that I'm condemned, and his Talmidim were very upset that he was condemned, and they tried to fight for him, and he told them, no, don't bother, and he was condemned, but he said, I know, he says, after I die, he says, and the hatred and the envy which people have subsides, he says, I will be recognized as one of the greatest Chachamim. The Rambam knew very well, because he knew the reality, you see. So there is in man the ability to be objective. Mustn't underestimate humanity. Humanity has the ability, otherwise we wouldn't have universities which recognize great people, even among the Gaon, even among the Masolim, and recognize great people. Greatness is recognized only after the person's particular situation, the emotions of the moment are gone, then later he's recognized. But at the time, it's impossible. Because at the time, the emotions are too powerful. That's why it says, that's another aspect of what the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, basically. The Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is like this, that if you give another individual kavod, they will recognize you not just because you gave them kavod, but they will even recognize objective traits that you have as an individual, because you remove from them the emotion that prevents them from that recognition. There is an objective recognition among people, and that's why there is such a thing. I mean, in a good society, there is such a thing as a shem tov. I mean, in a bad society, it's an evil. But in a good society, there is such a thing as a shem tov, and you see a lot of Chazal mentioned in others that. The mark of a perfected individual is that he's respected in his society. It's referring to a good society, of course. But it means that there are an individual who is truly a chacham, and if he finds himself in a good society, will be able to enjoy a good name. Because he strips the people of the emotions that prevent them from recognizing objectively his worth. But there is such a thing as a recognition of objective worth among humanity, even though it doesn't always work out, because if the tzaddik, for instance, should say certain things which should disturb the society, he won't be able to do it, won't be able to accomplish it. But in a general way, other than that, on a day-to-day basis, the individual will be recognized as a worthy individual, and he will enjoy the covet. So that's basically another concept in the Rabbeinu Yonah. That's why a lot of people who are people always, of course, confuse one thing for another. If a person has a bad name, they'll say it's because there's a righteous court. But it's not really the mark of a great person. You see, that would explain also Rabbeinu Yonah's statement when he says, "Vehu akavod hamiti." He says, this is the true kavod. What does it mean, it's the kavod hamiti? It means that when the people return the kavod, it's because they recognize, he gives them the opportunity to be on an objective level with regard to his personality. By doing this, he gives them the opportunity to be on an objective level with regard to his personality. And that's why it's the kavod hamiti. It means it's true recognition. Kavod that's not hamiti is just where a person is flattering somebody else. But the kavod hamiti is where it stems from a true recognition of his nature. Now, Rabbeinu Yonah is trying to say is that when you give another person kavod, and the person senses, there are a few emotions that are involved, but the net effect, in other words, he senses that you are satisfying his need that he has. He also considers you to be a person who happens to recognize a true individual. But the net effect is that he will be able to recognize in you the objective characteristics that you have that are of value. That's why it says the kavod hamiti. That's what it means by the kavod hamiti. Yeah. True. On a personal level, it's true. there's always a constant conflict that one individual senses between himself and another individual. And if you machabate another individual, you remove the conflict. Sure. You remove that conflict, and you open the door for the other person to have an objective appreciation of your... Without that, you can't. Yes. So here you have a member of the Chachamim. Dalit. Rabbi Levitas ish Yavne Omer, Ma'od Ma'od have Yishfal Ruach. That one should be very much a Shfal Ruach. How would you translate Shfal Ruach? Be a humble, low spirited. Okay? We'll soon see exactly what, more precisely what it means. Why should Tikvas Enos Rima? Because the end of a person's Tikva means his hope. The ultimate hope of man is Rima. Rima means decay. It means he's going to die. Okay. Yeah. It's an interesting thing, but the pasuk that term tikva is used by David HaMelech. And by Varch Davidus Kolakol, he says Mispal in the Nat Tfila over there. By Varch David, he says the Tfila every day. So at the end of the Tfila, if you take a look in the Divrei Yomim, at the end of the tefillah, he says to God, he says he's mispalad, God should help Klal Yisrael. He says, because you know that ain't tikva. There's no tikva for man. What does it mean there's no tikva for man? It means that he ultimately has to die. So the fact that he ultimately has to die, you see, means, what does it mean to say? It means that it takes away from the most powerful force of man is his fantasy of immortality. Fantasy, the egoism of man is based on his fantasy of immortality, and that's why it says, ain't tikva. Ain't tikva means there's no such thing. It doesn't exist. You have to face, the person has to face the reality principle. And the same thing over here as well. He says you should be a shfal ruach, should tikva sena shrima. Tikva sena means the ultimate that man fantasizes about. His greatness, his sense of greatness is in direct contradiction to the fact that he must die and decay. Right. At one time, the Rav one time mentioned, and he considered it as a part of the so they are thus, that man will never be able to extend his biological lifespan. That was something that he one time mentioned in the shiur. And he says, what science will accomplish, is what guessing what science, or estimating what science will accomplish before the science is unraveled, is not science. That's merely conjecture. And conjecture is very subject to human emotions. So I would say that... many things that people place their hope in, even though it deals with the realm of science, might not necessarily be scientifically possible. Yet, as we explained in the previous prakim, Shahanova hi mimailos amidos. Anova is one of the perfections of the midos, of human characteristics. And it's directly in between gaiva, haughtiness, and shiflus haruach is like total self-abnegation. That would be shiflus haruach. Total self-abnegation. He's a person who totally, has a very low image of himself. Okay, that's shiflus haruach. Person that feels low self-esteem. That's shiflus haruach. Low self-esteem is shiflus haruach, and gaiva is very high self-esteem. Okay, so the Rambam says that what is anava? Anava is directly center, dead center between low, very low self-esteem and very high esteem. Okay? So, alright, now, what does the Rambam say? He continues. So far it sounds alright, but let's go a little further. It's like this. So, v'ein lo shem acharak anova. So, it has no other term but anova. Ulegeyus sheimos rabim beloshen ivri. Gvalevenai and Gvalevenai and Ramos. All right. And Mishemos Achachomzal Ruach Gavoa Vagasas Ruach Mizgoa. The Kenegdon Shiflus Ruach. Ukvabianu Beperik of Hervi. We explained already. Sheodam Sarachlo Shiyatem Maat Echod Minatsevos. Achiyamo De Emsa Hamaisen Al Tsaras Yog. All right, so he says, really, we explained before that a person should be really center between all of the different midos. And a person shouldn't be too great at baltaiva, and he shouldn't be a person that's an ascetic. Either way is not good. He should be in between. In all the midos, the Rambam says a person should be in moderation. Moderation is the proper way of life, according to Yadis. However, he says like this: Avo b'mida azos levado midain she'or hamidos. But this mida alone, among other midos, ratzis loma begaiva legodel chisaron zos hamida etzalach asidim v'daitam. He says, since this trait is considered such a terrible trait, the trait of gaiva, so he says over here, this mida alone, he says. Since the Chachamim knew the harm of gaiva, of haughtiness, they went to the other extreme. Interesting thing. And they went to the opposite side, which is total low self-esteem, self-devaluation. Completely. Why? In order that a person shouldn't have any gaiva whatsoever. Now it sounds funny. It sounds like a contradiction. Because first he says Anov is directly dead center in between. Right? Which means to say that if you have a scale, so you have shiftless on one side, you have gaiva on the other side, dead center is Anov. Now he says the Chachamim went which way? Why? Because they didn't want to have any gaiva whatsoever. Right? But they wouldn't have gaiva whatsoever. They would partake of another. They would partake of another. It's just not logical. What are you saying? It's not logical. Because if you're going to tell me that there's an imaginary line, let's say. Alright? The imaginary line, on one side you have haughtiness, on the other side you have low self-esteem. What do you have in the center? So it says in the center, there's a term for the center. What is the term? Anova. So Anova is dead center. Now, if I go to the extreme, so I go to shiftless. I go all the way to shiftless. Why do I go all the way to shiftless? Because I don't want to have any gaiva. But if I move up, I'm not going to be moving towards gaiva. I have to move first towards Anova before I get to gaiva. So why should he say that I have to go to the other side in order to avoid gaiva? It doesn't make any sense. Okay? He's saying that another, the in between of another, really partakes of both. Partakes of both. I mean, so if you're going to say that another partakes of both gaiva and of shiflus, so then you can't give it a separate name. This is a reference point, center. But another seems to be a separate term. The Rambam says there's a term for it. It seems to be a certain state. If that's a certain state, if the center is a certain state, then it would seem illogical to be able to go. If you're going from shiflus, you're going to partake of gaiva. You should partake of another first. Go further in the Ramah. You have to go further. Kvaraisi, now he goes off on a little story. Kvaraisi b'sefer misifrei amidos. He said, I saw in a book, he doesn't mention which book it is. Sheshalu lechad hachasidim. They asked one of the chasidim, they said to him like this. Ramallah, they said, Eze yom ovar alecha b'simcha yosem v'kol yimei chayecha. Which was the happiest day of your life? Okay? Omar, he said like this. Yom asher yisin oseya b'sfina. A day that I was traveling on a ship. Vaya makomi bo shofo shvala makomos. He says, and I was, apparently he didn't have the upper class. He wasn't in the upper class. He was in the lower class on the ship. Vayisi lovers bluye sechavos, and I was wearing tattered clothes. Vayu besfina sochum abale rechush, and there were businessmen and people of wealth on the ship. Vani yisi mutal ben kami, and I was in my place. Vechad minosei asfina omad lahashtim, v'shviya alav Shiflusi Vamatsava Galur Shayusibo Achagilas Atmova Hishtin Alai. He says, and somebody had an urge to urinate. So he says, and this person, he looked at me, and he was laying on the ship, lower class, and this individual went over, in the sense that he's a nobody, and he urinated on him. So he said like this: His palesi alis chaskus techunasa azas benafsha. I was astounded at that this man's arrogance. Ubeemes lo itzta'ati belibi the mice of klal. He says it didn't bother me at all. Velo nisora bishumis ragshus, and I didn't have any sense of nothing, any emotional reaction. I didn't have any emotional reaction to it. He says, also machti simcha gedola. Then I was very happy. Shegati ad kedei kach, that I reached the level. Shelo yigizani zilzul oso achosa, velo samti libi elo. That it didn't bother me, and I didn't. He thought what? It's an interesting thing, yeah. What? And then the Rambam says, "Vain suffix," and there is no doubt. The Rambam says, "Shezeh agvul la'achram b'shiflus aruch." This certainly is the lowest ebb. Today, this rachek min agayva. That's what the Rambam says. Look at the story. You see, yeah, you could say like this. You could say, like Michael asked, you say, okay, so this person is a big Balgaiva, I mean, he wants to be a great owner. So somebody totally showed disregard for him, and I was completely happy. So this is itself is the biggest Gaiva. Yeah, but it's an interesting thing. The story is very interesting. Because if you look, you listen carefully to the story, you see something interesting. He didn't just say that he was happy that this person urinated on him, and therefore he felt. He didn't say, you notice, he didn't say that he was happy at the time. That's the key. Later he was happy. There wasn't no reaction. It's true there was no reaction, but it's an interesting thing. It's more than no reaction. What did he think at the time? You see what he says? Yeah, he says, Vani, he says, his palesi alis chaskus techuna sa'azas benafsha. Says I was awed by the amount of gall that this person has, the temerity of this individual to do such an action. What does it show you? It's a very Rambam mentioned a story. Yes, exactly. You see, the Rambam really gives you in this story. He gives you the key to what true anava is. You see? Yeah, exactly. It means that he was so detached in terms of his self that he was just involved in observation. It's almost exactly. See? It's almost as if it happened to somebody else. He was just overcome by the observation. How could a man do this? You know, it has nothing to do with him. Just an observation on human nature that a person could do such a thing. So he was completely detached emotionally from the situation. That's why the Rambam says that this is definitely the lowest level. The lowest level of shiflus aruch. See, the lowest level of shiflus aruch. Now it's an interesting, what? Yeah, it's an interesting thing. So it shows you what the shiflus aruch is really. What shiflus aruch is. What does it seem to be, shiflus aruch? And it's an interesting thing, I'll tell you. Because if you're going to say, now the problem becomes even greater. Because if you're going to say that anava is really the total perfection, so this, and the Rambam says that this is the lowest level. This is, there's no doubt about it, that this is the lowest level of shit. So it comes out that this Chacham, who reached this level, he was happy that he reached this level. But the point is, this level is really not the ultimate level. He still didn't reach anava, because this is the lowest level. And the right place is really to be anava. The only reason that you don't want to be in anava is because you're afraid of gaiva. So it's an amazing contradiction here. Because on the one hand, he tells you that Anov is really the perfect place to be. That means dead center. And now this individual, where does he find himself? Not dead center, but the lowest end. Now the lowest end of shiftless, he shouldn't be so happy because that's not so great anymore. That's not the greatness. The greatness is supposed to be Anov. You only go to the other side because you're afraid of Gaiva. But really, that's not the highest level, so why was he so happy? Okay? It's an interesting thing. Let me ask you another question. Why does he say that was the happiest day of his life? You need to say this, that was the most enjoyable experience that the person...